WBEZ is supported by Impact Grants Chicago. Over 400 women come together in a unique model of collective giving. Each member contributes $1,000, and together those donations grow into $100,000 grants for Chicago nonprofits that address critical challenges across the city. By pooling resources, individual gifts multiply into greater impact. Listeners can learn more about Impact Grants Chicago and past grant recipients at impactgrantschicago.org/join2025. This WBEZ podcast is supported by the Crown Family School of Social Work, Policy, and Practice at the University of Chicago. The master's program in social work offers a one-year advanced standing option for students with a bachelor's degree in social work that builds on prior training and connects students with expert faculty and 5 specialized pathways. Apply by February 1st at crownschool.uchicago.edu/socialwork. Inspire change. Shape the future.
What would your pitch be to revitalize downtown Chicago? Well, a group of University of Chicago grad students came up with an idea to turn a stretch of Michigan Avenue into a pedestrian-centered cultural corridor. That means no cars, just buses, cyclists, and yep, a lot of people. I'm Sasha Ann Simons, and this is Reset. The idea won this year's Harris Policy Innovation Challenge, and I was honored to be on the panel of 6 judges. With more on the vision, we spoke with Samantha Anderson, a master's student at the Harris School of Public Policy and member of the winning team. We also heard from Daniel Knowles, journalist at The Economist and author of the book Carmageddon: How Cars Make Life Worse and What to Do About It. Samantha began by describing the vision for the pedestrian corridor.
That was our, shocker recommendation that we had, and it was talking about turning a stretch of Michigan Avenue, starting it from Monroe Street to Wacker, mm-hmm. and having it be pedestrian, cyclist, and bus only, still with west and east access points for cars coming through, and it perfectly runs by the Millennium garages. So
yeah.
So if people want to park and then come enjoy the strip, it'll be very easy to do.
And what sparked that? Where did you guys come up with that as something that was needed now?
Actually, when we first were coming up with just a whole range of ideas of just things that we've seen have helped cities improve different areas and bring people back post-pandemic, it was one of our kind of throwaway ideas. Mm-hmm. And then we were having a hard time centering some of the ideas we had. We kind of had the arts co-living, which was another major recommendation, mm-hmm. the Pedway piece. And then actually it was from a professor who said, well, what if you can help connect these places? Mm. And we kind of chose which stretch would be the best place to do it and then thought about all the different ways to kind of mitigate any pushback that you get from that as yes. much as we can, even though there will always be pushback.
Yeah, because when you talk about no cars, you get a lot of people opening their eyes and saying, what?
Yes, and we were very intentional with the language around it. Nowhere in the presentation it specifically says no cars. And
okay,
so
maybe
says,
I said that.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, it helps with the headline for sure. but it is implied, of course, and just focusing on active and public transportation, which as you know, the city is already struggling with keeping up with ridership post-COVID.
Yeah.
And ways that it can support not just the loop, but also, the city at large.
Yeah. So, Daniel, she mentions here 3 sort of pillars to their presentation. So one was to transform Michigan Avenue into a pedestrian, cyclist, and bus-only corridor. 2 is to activate the underutilized pedway system. 3, to develop a cultural mile creative residency. So we're going to focus on those first 2. And I immediately think of you because I imagine you're cheering when you hear this idea.
The only problem I have with this idea is that it is coming from smart students at the Harris School and not the city, you know, or people who might actually do it. And I really hope that they read it and take it seriously. I think this is unfortunately something where Chicago's, you know, just quite behind. New York City has a congestion pricing program. You know, if you look at European cities, you look at the Ramblas in Barcelona or the Champs-Élysées in Paris. Sorry, I don't know why I'm in French for a second.
Paris.
There's, you know, it has been incredibly well established for a very long time now that one of the most effective ways to get, you know, shoppers, people back into sort of, you know, high density kind of retail places, which is what everybody says here they need for Michigan Avenue, is to reduce the number of cars. Mm-hmm. And, you know, as long as I've lived in Chicago, which is, you know, 3.5 years now, I've heard business people saying, oh, you know, it's a real problem. There isn't enough people downtown shopping. And I'm like, well, there's 6 lanes of traffic on Michigan Avenue. I don't go there. It's not that nice. So I think this stuff's overdue. And of course, I would say that. But yeah.
Yeah. You're the guy who wrote the book called Carmageddon. So in your view, why do cars make things worse?
Well, I think when you just come, you know, A, there's just a lot of them. They're loud and they're noisy and you know, it takes you time to cross the road and it makes walking around, you know, slower and less comfortable when you're kind of sharing space with, you know, fast or even slow moving vehicles. So people, you know, more likely to avoid these very kind of car congested areas. And most of the people who are in those cars going through city centers aren't necessarily, you know, using them to get to the city center place. They're perhaps residents going through or that sort of thing. So businesses tend to systematically kind of overestimate how many of their customers are coming in cars. And, you know, you can see in New York City, everybody talks about, oh God, congestion pricing might be so terrible for business. And actually, it's way up. Broadway attendance, I was looking up before we came in, is up 17%.
Even since they've implemented the pricing. Really?
It's gone up because of the congestion pricing.
How do we become so dependent on them as a society, cars?
Oh, there you have to read my book to plug it. But, you know, I mean, 100 years of sort of a ratchet effect where, you know, starts with an elite get cars and then gradually, you know, more people have them and they see through the window and they begin to think that's how everybody gets around. And so everything just gradually, street by street, becomes, you know, more and more car centric.
Yeah.
And yeah.
What do you say to skeptics, Samantha, of your presentation overall and this vision?
I'd say look at cities that are doing it already and see how it works. I get the concerns. I get that people live a life where cars are a very central mode of transportation. But I also know they don't have to be because they weren't always there and they don't have to always be there. And public transportation, especially in Chicago, has so much more potential to grow and expand. But it can't do that without more people riding for there to be more funding.
Mm-hmm.
So I think look at other cities first. See that this has worked in other places.
Right.
And even, I don't know, I think a lot of people going on vacations, they enjoy places like this, enjoy a place they can just walk around and not have to worry about parking and things like that. So
yeah, you often hear people say they're looking to, oh, it's so walkable. I love that. It's such a walkable city.
Yes, and I don't get the issue with bringing that back home.
Yeah, I was impressed as one of the judges of the competition with you all included detailed examples of successful pedestrian zones.
Yes.
What else can you share with us about the path in Toronto, for instance, and others that you researched?
It's huge. So that's their underground pedestrian walkway. So kind of aligns with that other recommendation, which is meant to connect and bridge outward on the corridor we suggested. But it has so much retail and dining, and I think it's still not as big as Montreal. Montreal is the biggest one that exists.
It's huge.
It's called the Underground City, and it's insane. But people like walking underground this much. Imagine how great it could be to walk above ground when it's nice outside in the summer.
The possibilities.
Yeah.
Oh, boy. What do you think we gain from moving away from cars?
I think we gain a lot of community back, and people are missing out on that, not realizing how many interactions are lost because of just the individualistic nature of cars. Also, lots of time. Well, I'll say depending on where you're located in the city and how close your necessities are to you, it could be very helpful with time, as well as money back from gas and the cost of maintenance. And people can get a lot back that they're not realizing. And I think there does need to be more infrastructure to help like support people wanting to make that change before people can fully make it. But I think it takes a little bit of both happening slowly to get to that end point.
your group's overall vision for this, you know, this reimagined cultural mile would cost a pretty penny. So talk a bit more about that and just some of the proposed funding sources that you all talk about.
So the cost was just over $300 million that we estimated. And most of that, honestly, very little of that was for the pedestrianized corridor, because the initial pilot phasing that we suggested would mainly be from like jersey barriers and things that the city already has that could easily block off the road. And then a lot of those other funds would be towards, if it was actually made permanent, then putting in just more bus stops, more safety things, lighting, all the things that make streets safe. And also a lot of it went towards the pedway renovations as well.
Okay.
And a lot of those funding sources normally are federal transportation grants, of course, right now.
Yeah.
A little bit more shaky. But we also propose different ways to get TIF funding, tax incremental financing. And, yeah, also working with partners along that corridor and in the pedway and different owners there already to help really bring together kind of a organized coalition along the strip.
I will say, despite the big price tag, yours seemed like the most realistic idea and the one that we could probably implement and start working on now. So we weren't fazed. We weren't fazed by that. So Danielle, and back to you. Cars, I mean, they are convenient. Okay, let's give them that. Our communities are built around them, as we've described, whether that's for good, for better or for worse. It just doesn't seem like something so easy to change overnight. So what would you say are the key first steps?
Oh, I think it could be easy to change overnight.
Oh,
just drag
tell
out
me
those
more.
Jersey barriers and just block the roads, you know, just start it like
oh,
that.
Oh, you mean just block just us drivers.
Yeah. But no, I mean, you're right. Winning this kind of argument politically is challenging. And again, I go back to the New York City thing. People were so upset at the idea of congestion pricing, but now they're like standing up going, we are never turning those cameras off, you know, Kathy Hochul is. And so I think what tends to happen when these things are implemented, they become very popular very quickly and people begin to see, God, why didn't we do it any other way beforehand? And so I think sometimes there's just a case for being a bit bold here, and you'll find even if you're a politician who gets a lot of, you know, angry kind of focus groups about it, that afterwards actually you'll get rewarded. So maybe you just need to lead. And, you know, I think Chicago could be doing an awful lot, you know, around pedestrianization in general, you know, beyond just Michigan Avenue, where I think it's a really radically strong case for it. But there are lots of parts of the city where...
Do you have specific ideas you can share?
Well, I just start with Milwaukee Avenue because I live on that there, so that would be nice.
Let's
narrow some of the roads, put in some, you know, you don't need to kick off cars entirely. But, like, the city has wide streets and they don't always have to carry as much traffic as they do. You know, I think the way that the broader region to use its toll roads is completely backwards. You pay a toll road as you come out of the city into the suburbs where there's usually not that much traffic. Whereas, you know, you're coming down into the city, you know, on the Kennedy, and it might take you an hour or more kind of in fully jammed traffic, and you're not paying a toll. And that seems backwards to me. So there's lots of things you could do like this. And I kind of think they would work and they would be popular, but that might just be me.
Yeah, well, no, this pedestrian focus, I mean, how does it create vibrancy, you think, in a city?
Mostly because you get rid of the cars and people will be happier to be in a place. It's just nicer and you have more space for those pedestrians. And we just kind of know that works. So the second thing I think is that it helps encourage, you know, lifestyles, which this city's already doing quite a good job of, you know, having housing built near downtown, having places built where you don't need a car as much. And it's already true that, you know, Chicagoans drive a fraction of the distance of Americans on average, you know, literally like a third of the distance of the average American.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So people here already, you know, are used to using public transport to biking, to walking some of the time.
So a lot of people own cars and then they just sit there parked for a good chunk of the day.
Exactly. So I don't think it's as, you know, if you were proposing sort of radical pedestrianization in Houston or Atlanta, it might be a bit more challenging. But I think people here, you know, they already take the L downtown because it costs you a fortune to park and takes you ages. So it's not that huge a change, I think.
Yeah. Samantha, let's touch on that third pillar real quick, that develop the Cultural Mile Creative Residency Program. So your plan includes housing and I remember professional development too for artists. Yeah. Talk more about that.
So kind of playing off of the LaSalle Reimagined developer support they were doing. That's what we wanted to do. But for affordable, well, mixed income housing with both that prioritizes artists and cultural workers so that more can live in that in downtown because of the high cost of living downtown and the high importance of those workers there.
So you address the affordability piece?
Mm-hmm. And also, I'm losing. Also, hoping to provide them with live workspaces so that some of those developments can include different studios or like gallery spaces that can be used for public use but prioritized for the artists to cut costs there and have the residents within these different developments have kind of professional network and include them in projects like the Pedway or the pedestrianized corridor through murals and different streetscapes.
Oh, that would be beautiful.
Yeah. So it really is all meant to
There's that
together.
Vibrancy we were just talking about, right, Daniel?
So we're hoping to incorporate everything everywhere and have the culture and connection piece kind of thread throughout rather than see these as three big distinct ideas.
Mm-hmm. You talked about Paris earlier, Daniel, but what other cities around the world do you think are getting this overall vision, getting this right?
I think New York really now, unfortunately, Chicago-New York rivalry, but New York has the congestion pricing there has made such a big difference quickly. Mm-hmm. I was back in London at Christmas, and London has got so quiet and it's so pleasant to walk through as essentially they've kind of, what started 20 years ago, congestion pricing there, but they've, narrowed roads, they've kind of got rid of loads of parking spaces, Copenhagen, mm-hmm. There's different, even I don't think Minneapolis has come, is anywhere near even where Chicago is yet. But in terms of where it's come, it's changed an awful lot in terms of, they've got one pedestrianized street and they've kind of, put in a lot of bike lanes and things. Even American cities are doing these things.
Yeah. I remember with Samantha, when you all suggested, you had the examples of the path in Toronto and the underground city in Montreal. And I think one of the judges asked you, do you have any examples of, where it's happened, and worked in America? And you were able to sort of respond to that pretty quickly with cities like what Daniel just mentioned. But, developing a pedway or redeveloping in the case that we'd be doing here locally, is that something that's just easier said than done?
I think in terms of the city's capacity, it is, for sure.
Yeah.
But I think once the funding is secured, once there's a centralized governance of the different owners, which has been a big issue of getting everybody on board for these renovations and activities, then it's very possible. I think there's so much potential there, and especially with Chicago winters, like thinking about the indoor potential that can be like still outdoor style of events
mm-hmm.
that can expand from Millennium Park and expand from Daley Plaza. So I think there's a lot of potential there. I think it just takes people getting on board and getting the money.
Yes. Speaking of money, after winning this grand prize, what is next for your team? Could we get some conversations going, like Daniel said in the beginning, with the city and get this, something like this a reality? Or am I dreaming here?
Hopefully people are hearing it. I intern at CDOT, so I know that there's some people it's reaching
them. There's some
buzz? Yeah.
Okay.
But it's just a matter of capacity again. But we get to present to a few different city organizations that hopefully will result in more and see where it goes from there.
Yeah, I am talking to the mayor later this week, so I'll save this tape for him and have him listen to this for his prep.
I appreciate it.
What do you think, Daniel?
Well, I think if you get the mayor on board, that would be impressive.
I'll try.
I think, one of the things I've learned covering the city is that obviously, there's a huge number of organizations, that you have to kind of get on board to do almost anything. And that's a real challenge. But I do think, sometimes people focus on the cost and a project like this, even the amount of money that you need to regenerate the Pedway, that money kind of exists. The business owners who are around there, the property owners, like they will benefit from this and it would generate tax revenue. And so it's more like a coordination issue of getting it so that, the people who will benefit can kind of pay in mm-hmm. some way. And I think that's one of the big challenges in general of kind of governance in the United States in a lot of places, but particularly where in the US where you have so much fragmented, so many yeah. units of government. But it can be done.
So there's not necessarily lack of interest. It's just getting everybody on the same page to execute.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's just, you have so many different veto points here.
Yeah. Lots of cooks in the kitchen. We'll leave it there for now. That's Daniel Knowles, who's the Economist Midwest correspondent, also author of Carmageddon, How Cars Make Life Worse and What to Do About It. And Samantha Anderson, who's a master's student in the Harris School of Public Policy. Thank you both so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This episode was produced by Micah Yason and Lene Dominic. It was edited by Dan Tucker and mixed by Ari Mejia. To never miss an episode of Reset, make sure to subscribe to the podcast wherever you listen. I'm Sasha Ann Simons. We'll meet again later today.
I love how WBEZ shows different sides of the story. I never feel like it's too polarized, and I think the reporters do an excellent job of trying to get the full story, trying to show different other sides. I'm often, when I'm listening to public radio, think in my mind, well, what about X? Or like, I have another question. Or like, have they thought about X? And most of the time, WBEZ thinks about all of it, which I really appreciate.